From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, Ingham County gets ready to tabulate a waterfall of mailed-in votes.
We are on track to triple the number of absentee ballots voted than 2016.
So what's that mean for when the final tallies are in? We'll speak with Michigan's Lieutenant Governor about what to expect for election returns over the next few days.
I think we're going to have to be patient. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in other states. I don't know what day we're going to be finished counting in Michigan. But I believe that American democracy is resilient.
Also, a new generation of Latinx voters considers its election options.
You know, we know that the Latinx community is not a monolith, but we're not necessarily seeing that here in Michigan, Latinx voters tend to be more Republican. If anything, they tend to be much more Democrat.
We'll talk about how the pandemic and other issues shaped their choices. Those stories and more just ahead. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, the issues shaping Latino voters' opinions on the 2020 presidential election.
The Latinx community was in Kent County at least, was 40% of the positive test results for COVID, even though we make up about 17%. And especially with the undocumented community, there was no assistance for them.
That's later in the hour. But first, cities like Detroit, Grand Rapids, Ann Arbor, and Lansing have their clerk's offices going full tilt, processing a wave of absentee ballots. That also means that some poll challengers have started to monitor election proceedings. In Detroit today, one poll challenger wearing a horror mask and shouting at workers was kicked out of the TCF Center as volunteers began processing ballots.
What unit are you with, sir? What unit are you with, sir?
A video was taken and posted to Twitter by a Detroit Free Press reporter. But by and large, these types of events go on with little fanfare or drama. Here to talk about the day and clerks' preparations for elections and tabulating is Barb Byram, clerk for Ingham County. Barb, welcome back to Stateside.
Oh, my soul. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, first off, we need to talk about your Twitter feed.
Do you like my jokes? Aren't they great?
For the uninitiated, Barb Byram has populated her Twitter feed with a series of increasingly vile puns as Election Day draws closer with the hashtag, could you say it for us, Barb?
Joke, then vote.
Why did you do this? Why did you submit me and so many other Twitter followers to this?
Well, towards, I think it was November of last year, Twitter had gotten very negative and my stress and anxiety probably got the best of me. And I decided, by golly, we're all going to start with a really bad joke every morning. And so I think I might have missed a couple days, but I've tried to have really bad jokes every morning.
Barb, what are some of your favorites from this screed that you've been on?
Oh, my soul. So my favorite is, where do polar bears vote?
I'll bite.
The North Pole.
No.
Wait. What's Forrest Gump's password? The number one, Forrest.
One, Forrest, one. She'll be here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Well, I would say you are definitely the mom joke queen of 2020.
Oh, my soul. Thank you so much. I appreciate that crown.
I don't know exactly how it changed mental health in this year, but I'll just say thanks. As to the workplace, how are things going in the clerk's office so far?
Well, you know, we're doing great. Ingham County is one of Michigan's larger counties. And as of Saturday night, Halloween night at 11:59, Ingham County clerks had received 89,128 absentee ballots already submitted. And so we are on track to triple the number of absentee ballots voted than 2016. Now, keep in mind, 2016 is not 2020, because in 2018, the voters passed Proposal 3, which allows no reason absentee voting. So that's one of the reasons why we're seeing an uptick in absentee voting. But then certainly the other reason is because we're in the middle of a pandemic.
What did you learn about counting absentee ballots during primary season this year?
Well, as county clerk, I usually don't count ballots. Now, this time around, I am hosting a consolidated absentee counting board. But some of the things we know as election officials, we knew months and months ago that we needed more time to process ballots. Unfortunately, the legislature did not act as well as we thought they, as we had hoped.
We should say the legislature passed a provision that does allow people to start processing ballots for tabulation a day early. You're suggesting that wasn't enough?
No, it wasn't even close enough. What the legislature passed was allowing local clerks to open envelopes. That's it. And added more work if they decided to open the envelopes today. I know City of Lansing is taking advantage of that opportunity and East Lansing as well. So we'll see how it helps or doesn't when it comes to the time in processing absentee ballots. It takes quite a bit of time to process an absentee ballot, more time than it does an in-person voted ballot. And that's because there are policies and procedures that must be followed to maintain the secrecy of the vote for that voter, and then the safety and security of our elections.
Do you expect much in terms of a large turnout for in-person, regardless of the number of absentee ballots cast?
I expect in-person to be active, perhaps not as active as in 2016, but I do expect those polling locations to still be active. Yes, people are very engaged in this election.
You know, I mentioned that there was already a bit of an incident at the TCF Center in Detroit. Could you tell us a little bit more about clerks' relationships with poll challengers who are trained by organizations on the right and the left?
Right. So challengers, it's a specific designation. They must be credentialed, typically by a Democrat or a Republican party. And there are laid out reasons why a challenger may challenge a process or a voter, but that must be done in good faith. And if it's not, then that clerk or that precinct chair will contact the county clerk or the Bureau of Elections at the state of Michigan and proceed. This is usually a very straightforward process, and I expect it to be tomorrow as well.
Are problems common? Is it typical to see someone perhaps getting aggressive on a tabulation day or as they're watching over the vote?
No, it's all about the procedures. And so we should not have aggression. We should not have yelling. We shouldn't have any of that. That is not expected. Our precinct workers are individuals who are committing hours to the democracy. And it is imperative that we thank our election workers and treat them with respect.
You've had plenty of time to sort of go over in your mind all the planning. Is there anything that's still maybe that kept you awake last night about planning for tomorrow?
Well, planning for tomorrow, local clerks, county clerks, we have been preparing for this all year. And the election doesn't just end when the polls close. After unofficial results are posted, the next day, the Board of Canvassers, two Democrats and two Republicans, will go through the election and make sure everything balances and things were done accordingly, and then ultimately certify the election. My concern at this point is making sure that all individuals who wish to exercise their right to vote are afforded that opportunity, regardless of if it is via absentee ballot or in person on election day. I want to make sure that they're able to exercise their right to vote in a manner they so choose.
Well, but what kinds of things? I mean, do you have any indication of whether spots that are typically high traffic will be especially high traffic tomorrow?
I do not at this time. You know, Ingham County has already received, Ingham County clerks have already received over 89,000 absentee ballots submitted. So that is a large chunk of voters who have already taken advantage of absentee voting. Keep in mind, Ingham County has just over 214,000 voters.
Is there anything that's particularly surprised you about how this election cycle has played out, either in terms of turnout or who's volunteering and how many folks are volunteering to work the polls this year?
I have been pleasantly surprised by individuals who have never been engaged in elections or politics or anything of that sort, who have come and volunteered to work the election. And now keep in mind, when one is a precinct inspector or election worker, they're not actually volunteering. They're getting paid. They're not getting paid much, but they're getting paid. And it is wonderful to see the next generation of election workers stepping up.
So what are you projecting about how long it might take your office to deliver certified results? And is that very different than the time that it will take for us to know who won some of the important races, including the top of the ticket presidential balloting and the Senate race and other races of high concern this year?
So Michigan law requires the county clerks to certify election results to the state by November 17th. But we will have unofficial election night results sometime Wednesday morning, I hope. In Ingham County.
What are the factors that you think might most affect your ability to deliver that?
So oftentimes it's if there is a computer problem, if people did not show up to work on election day, breakdown in communication often is the opportunity when results are delayed. So I expect Ingham County to have their results mid-morning on Wednesday. But you know, anything could happen between now and election day. And although we are just over 24 hours away from when polls close at 8 p.m. local time in Michigan, anything is possible. But I know that the election administrators in our great state stand ready to conduct a fair election.
Well, we know in 2020, not only can anything happen, but anything usually does happen. Here's hoping for a nice, quiet day for you and your volunteers and your staff. Barb, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you so much. I have plenty of coffee, Excedrin, and Tums.
Barb Byram is clerk for Ingham County. Hey, I just wanted to tell you, we're going to be doing live breaks on Tuesday nights starting at 8 as the polls begin to close and the tabulation begins. We'd love to have you listening along with us and with NPR's coverage over the air or streaming at michiganradio.org. You can also follow Michigan Radio's social media feeds to keep an eye on what's going on all through the night. Coming up, what's the bigger picture for election preparedness in Michigan?
I think that we're going to have, a new standard for efficacy in terms of how the process works. And I'm excited about that because I think it'll encourage more people to participate in voting going forward. And that's ultimately what we all should be focused on.
We'll be back with Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist after a short break. This is Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Tomorrow's election day. And questions are still circling about how prepared Michigan is and how prepared county and city and township clerks can be for what we know is record turnout. That may be especially true in the city of Detroit, where a legacy of election foibles brings a degree of uncertainty around when results will come in. We already know at the state level, Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson has told us to not expect final election results until at least Friday. With us today is Garland Gilchrist, Lieutenant Governor of Michigan, who has been involved in the administration's efforts to keep the election on track and safe. Governor Gilchrist, thanks for joining us.
It is good to be here with you.
How are you feeling with less than 24 hours left until the polls open?
So I am very confident in the work that's been done by the Secretary of State and by our local election administrators. There's an unprecedented partnership, actually, in the city of Detroit to work together between the Detroit City Clerk and the Secretary of State to make sure that we have not only expanded access to voter registration and to voting, thanks to what happened in 2018 with Proposal 3, more voting locations available for people to vote early in person than ever have been before, but also to make sure that we have strong processes for securely managing and transporting ballots and that they'll be counted accurately. And so, you know, we have to have more hands on deck for this record turnout that we're going to see. And I know that the people who've stepped up to work the polls, you know, we have 30,000 people across the state who've stepped up. We'll be supporting our longtime poll workers who are going to be able to participate. And I think that we're going to have I think, a new standard for efficacy in terms of how the process works. And I'm excited about that because I think it'll encourage more people to participate in voting going forward. And that's ultimately what we all should be focused on.
Mm-hmm. I understand you were with former President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden over the weekend. They were, of course, in Flint and Detroit. And meanwhile, we had President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence also making multiple appearances in Michigan. What does this final stage of the campaign season feel like to you compared with 2016?
Well, I think it is really a strong message being sent from the campaigns that Michigan matters. Like what happened to Michigan matters in terms of setting the direction of the country. And so the fact that, yes, President Obama coming here and doing two events in state with Vice President Biden is a strong signal. They have not been on the campaign trail together until this weekend in Michigan. And it shows how valuable Michigan residents and voters are. You know, I think it's exciting. I think it's great that Michigan voters are being heard from directly and that are hearing directly from our candidates. And I hope that it increases turnout across the board so that we have record turnout, not just at the top of the ticket, but also in our Senate races, our state House races, our state Supreme Court races. I just want more people to vote, and more attention from candidates typically leads to that.
Let's talk a little bit about what happens if Michigan is still in play on Wednesday, on Thursday, and Friday. Can you sort of walk us through what the process will be like if the count goes beyond Tuesday night?
Well, the first priority needs to be understanding that it always takes longer to count ballots than election night. There are projections made by media companies, but those are never official results. That's one thing. Second is that we need to focus on getting the count right, not getting the count fast. And I think the voters of Michigan, who again are voting in record numbers, they're voting because they believe that their votes will be counted accurately. And so if that takes a few days, it takes a few days. What I think people need to guard against is the fact that the president has made clear that he intends to lie and declare victory on Tuesday night before every vote is counted. And no one should do that. No one should trust him. It's just yet another example of what he's willing to do to lie to people for his own gain. And so I think that in Michigan, we will continue to send a message that we are going to get this process right and accurate, and that we will be patient. And I believe the voters of Michigan want us to get it right, and they will be patient too.
Detroit, which is your hometown, is always integral in Michigan's elections. It's certainly true this year as well. And Detroit has drawn the attention of Republican poll challengers. Are you concerned about that or the role that they may play in the count?
There has always been a history of regulated poll of observation, and there's a process for people to apply to identify themselves. So I have no problem with that process happening as it has been happening historically. I do have a problem with the president of the United States openly recruiting and encouraging people to come and intimidate voters. That is illegal. He is encouraging people to come and break the law. And I don't want to see that happen to Detroit voters or voters any place in the state of Michigan. But I also know that there will be people who will be standing up at the polling place to reject that voter intimidation. We will have, I know, people of faith and clergy leaders across Michigan will be in Detroit and other places, making sure that they are showing that voting is a sacred institution in our democracy and that it should be respected and protected. So I think that you'll see activity also at the polling places in Detroit, for example, where people should just be excited about voting. People are excited about the opportunity to cast their ballots and participate in their democracy. I think we're going to show up in higher numbers than we ever have before.
Hmm. You're someone who's very well acquainted with the difficulties and the tension of a close election that hinges on the integrity of the voting process. You ran for city clerk in Detroit in 2017 because of a litany of past issues that you believed you could make some change on. And in that race against Janice Winfrey, the election was decided on 1,400 votes. Can you take us back to that night and what was going through your mind at that time?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I care about the integrity of the voting process a great deal. It's why I did. I got into public life to try to be an election administrator and make sure that Detroiters would have confidence in their ballots when they cast them. And I still believe that's critically important. And I'm glad that we have this partnership with the state to make sure that we have support for our poll workers, that we've had resources available to start these satellite voting centers in Detroit so that it's easier to vote, and that the training that's happened for those who will be managing those ballots, especially those absentee ballots, I think is going to make a big difference in terms of the efficacy of the process. So I'm looking forward to this process being, a new standard for how well it works and how much Detroiters can trust it. And so, that, you know, back in 2017, when I ran for that office, you know, it's grueling. It's part of the reason why I don't like close elections, so that we're not on pins and needles and not concerned. And I think that is certainly in play, because they're the people who we trust with power. I mean, people in Michigan see that they can trust Joe Biden, they can't trust Donald Trump.
Right. At that point, I mean, the process really did take its time. You asked for a recount, and results ultimately came back in December after the election. And absentee votes really did make a difference in that point. You ultimately decided not to challenge the election results. What kinds of things do you think are important to consider in making a decision like that? What was key at that time in figuring out, you know, when diligence has been done?
I think what's important is transparency. And you know, I think starting back in September, we've seen transparency in terms of how the processes would be operating to manage the counting and processing of absentee ballots. The state legislature has given more tools to local election administrators like the Detroit City Clerk to be able to begin processing absentee ballots. And that pre-processing, the day before the election, will actually enable more accuracy in how they're counted, because you're not rushing as much, because you're not starting at 7 a.m. And so I think that will help the process work better. And once you trust that process, that's when you believe that, okay, look, this election, the results are what they've been counted to be, and it's time to move forward. And I think we'll be able to do that with this process, because there are more tools available to the city clerk than there ever have been before.
Yeah, we do know that the city clerk is going to be running ballot counters in three shifts to try to avoid exhaustion issues, which that's got to be an issue with the number of absentee votes coming in this year. Knowing what you know, what do you think might happen if the U.S. election system takes more than a week to deliver final results nationally this year?
I think we're going to have to be patient. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in other states. I don't know what day we're going to be finished counting in Michigan. But I believe that American democracy is resilient. I think we can survive waiting a few days to make sure we get this election right, because the people are resilient. Look no further than how we've had to be resilient with this pandemic. We can stick to what we believe is important. And I think getting the results of the presidential election and every election on the ballot right, that's important enough to wait for and important enough to work for. And so I think voters are going to do the work, and then we're going to wait patiently, and we're not going to listen to anyone who's going to try to prematurely lie about the results, because we want to get the right results so we can choose the right path forward. So I think that it's going to be different. We're not used to that, but we've adjusted to a lot of things this year. So this will just be yet another one.
Everybody who we talk to who has an involvement in the voting process has reminded us that nothing happening this week hasn't happened before, you know, that the voting process it has a durability to it. That may be true, but it certainly seems at odds with the way people are feeling right now, people who may be out of work, who's suffered tremendous loss this year, and have just seen the state and the country go through so many overt confrontations. What do you think about post-election that will help walk the state back from the edge that we're standing on right now?
This has been such a difficult year. And yeah, I mean, I've experienced this loss personally. People across the state have experienced a very deep, deep losses due to COVID-19 or the economic impact or having their hours cut or their jobs or things like that. It's been really difficult. So we need to have some healing. I think people in Michigan are ready to take care of one another like we have been all year. People of Michigan have tried their best to be vigilant, tried their best to adjust to wearing masks and practicing physical distancing, have figured out how to vote in record numbers during a pandemic. Like, we can do what we put our minds to. And I think we're going to put our minds to how do we come together to get through this once in 100 year pandemic and all of the impacts that it's had on our lives. And I think that we are capable of that, more than capable of that, in Michigan. And so I am very hopeful about what the coming days will look like going forward for the people of our state as we figure out how to survive and then thrive.
So where are you headed out to today and tomorrow?
Today I'm headed to West Michigan. I'm headed to Muskegon and to Kalamazoo and to Grand Rapids. I am working to get out the vote all across the state. I want people to know that they can turn their ballots in today. But I've been all over the state. I've been in Traverse City. I've been in Oakland County. I've worked with our Detroit candidates, getting young voters out to vote, particularly Black men. And I've been in Midland. And like I said, I'm going to Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids and Muskegon today. it's important that people know that we need them to complete their ballots this year. One of the things that I was really disheartened by in 2016 is that tens of thousands of people in Michigan left at least one electoral choice unfilled. They didn't vote for president, or they didn't vote for Congress, they didn't vote for judges, or something like that. I want people to complete their whole ballots, because I believe that Michiganders have the right to have their voices heard in every election opportunity. And so my message is also to fill out that whole ballot, include that nonpartisan section of the ballot. It's really important.
Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, hey, have a safe couple of days, and we wish you and your family the best this week. Take care.
Thank you. Same to you and everyone else. People, please wear your mask if you're going to go vote in person, and go to mi.gov/vote to finalize your plan to cast your ballot.
Democratic Latinx voters could help determine whether Michigan flips blue this November. But there are questions about whether former Vice President Joe Biden's campaign is reaching this electorate. Michelle Jokish-Polo sent us this story.
Over the sound of cars passing outside Supermercado La Estrellita, a neighborhood staple for the Latinx community in Lansing, Corinne Kendall, who's originally from Mexico, says she feels like there's never been such a divided America.
You know, we were just all so sad because we never thought that our country would put a man like that in that position. You know, a person who would, we just were so, it was terrible. It was heartbreaking, you know.
Kendall is concerned about institutional discrimination and economic and educational opportunities. She's planning to cast her ballot for Joe Biden this November, but says she doesn't think the Latinx community in the area will show up to vote. For Democrats to turn out to Latinx voters, they need to understand key differences between communities around the country. Mara Osfeld analyzes exit poll data for Telemundo, one of the largest Spanish-speaking networks in the U.S. She says the key difference between Latinx voters in Michigan and a state like Florida is that Michigan voters are less proximate to the immigration experience.
You know, like if you look at Florida, there tends to be more people who are recent immigrants. There's more Spanish-dominant immigrants here, whereas in Michigan, a larger share of the Latinx population actually speaks English at home.
Oswald says many Latinx Florida voters are newer immigrants and have concerns Michigan voters are less likely to have.
Many of them have left Venezuela or Cuba because of their concerns about the state influence over personal, what they felt should be non-governmental matters.
She says in Michigan, Latinx voters are concerned about things like institutionalized discrimination, the concentration of wealth, and access to educational opportunities. According to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, nearly 70% of eligible Latinx voters in Michigan are of Mexican origin. Angela Ocampo teaches political science with a focus on Latinx politics at the University of Michigan. She says the Latinx community has been hit really hard during the pandemic, and that will be a driving force in how they vote.
And so this is something that going into the election is really at the forefront and right at the, like, in their minds, on the top of their minds and their everyday experiences.
In 2020, there are enough Latinx voters to flip the state back to blue. In 2016, Trump narrowly won the state by nearly 11,000 votes. Ocampo says there are 34,000 more eligible Latinx voters this year than there were in 2016. But in November, it's really about mobilization and how many of those that are eligible will actually turn out. She says the fact that Latinx leaders were missing from the Democratic National Convention shows the party's lack of intention in reaching out to this electorate.
And I think that the absence of key people like Julian Castro were obvious and were really, you know, shocking for the Latinx community.
Tom Paris chairs the Democratic National Committee. He says the party is making unprecedented investments to draw in Latinx voters in the state because he believes they can make a difference in this upcoming election.
And Joe Biden's going to enable Latinos to get their jobs, to get their lives back, to have their kids back in school because he has a plan for dealing with coronavirus. The stakes couldn't be higher for Latino voters in Michigan.
Earlier this year, national polls found Democratic Latinx voters overwhelmingly supported Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' primary campaign. Chuck Rocha, was advisor to the 2020 Sanders campaign and is the author of Tio Bernie, a book about how the Sanders campaign engaged Latino voters. He says the key difference between the way Biden and Sanders have engaged this electorate is in the prioritization of young Latinx voters.
We actually had a conversation with these young people who never get targeted by any campaign, and we said, would you like to vote for Bernie Sanders? And then when we told them about the issues, of course they lined up on the Green New Deal, increasing the minimum wage, Medicare for all, like college affordability.
According to political scientists, Latinx voters in Michigan tend to be very young, and almost 40% are considered millennials. Juan Morales, a recent high school graduate in Lansing, says he knows he's voting for Biden because he doesn't want four more years of Trump. But he's not as excited about Biden as he was about Bernie Sanders, whose policies on gun control, marijuana, and college loan forgiveness more closely align with his beliefs. Morales says he's been encouraging his fellow Latinx friends to vote, but he says very few of them are planning to vote.
Only like half, maybe, of the people I know are probably going to vote in November, as far as friends my age, just because they haven't taken it upon themselves to register.
If young Latinx voters like Juan stay home, it could be an Achilles heel for Michigan Democrats and Joe Biden. I'm Michelle Jokish-Bolo.
After the break, a few more thoughts from the ground game and what the campaigns are and are not doing to reach out. That's in a moment. You're with Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. 2020 is a huge year for many kinds of voters. It's such a contested race at the top of the ticket. Our state politics reporter Rick Pluta has been going around saying, show me a voting bloc in Michigan that doesn't matter. However, this is a particularly big year for younger voters coming of age. And it so happens that no demographic in the U.S. has more young voters right now than Latinx Americans, a cohort that's helping reshape an already important piece of the electorate. Joining us now to talk more about how Latinx voters in Michigan are feeling this election day is Sergio Sierra Reyes. He's a community organizer in and around Grand Rapids. And Angela Ocampo is with us as well. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Michigan. Sergio, Angela, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you, April.
Angela Ocampo, what do we know about eligible Latinx voters in Michigan, where they live, and maybe what their lives are like?
Yeah, so we know that they predominantly care about a variety of different issues. I think speaking to what Sergio was saying, we know that while immigration reform is a big issue for them, that they're also really concerned about the handling of the pandemic. They're also really worried about the economy and cost of healthcare. We know that the Michigan voters in Michigan are different from those in a lot of other states. They tend to be, on average, more English dominant than in other parts of the country. And they also tend to be more along the lines of Mexican and Puerto Rican origin, Mexican origin dominating this particular population.
Sergio, what are you finding just in your unscientific explorations of how outreach has been happening? Do you feel like you're seeing much, if any, being done with Spanish language outreach?
Yes, there has been quite a lot, actually, here with the Urban Core Collective, my organization that I work with. My colleagues have been doing a lot of Spanish engagement, and then organizations like the Latina Network and the Latino Network here in Grand Rapids, the Latino Community Coalition, the Hispanic Center, the Hispanic Chamber, they've been engaging with voters in Spanish and kind of bridging that gap. We're actually sending people to volunteer at the polls to translate in Spanish. And actually, people have taken time off and not leaving any possible barriers to chance. So actually working the polls, volunteering at the polls, something that I think has been unprecedented here in West Michigan. So it's been happening here.
Yeah. The Latinx community has been one of the hardest hit by COVID, and there are a lot of people who are essential workers and business owners in the community. Sergio, what was your observation of whether COVID relief was available for the people who really needed it most?
So initially, here for about 4 or 5 months, the Latinx community was in Kent County, at least, was 40% of the positive test results for COVID, even though we make up about 17%. And especially with the undocumented community, there was no assistance for them. So that was quite a challenge for us. The same organizations that we mentioned, along with Movimiento Cosecha and other organizations here, the local community foundation, created a fund called La Lucha specifically for immigrants that do not qualify for other benefits. So that was quite a challenge. And then businesses were really hurting. Latino businesses were really struggling to stay open. Some of them I know have closed permanently. And so that was quite a challenge, getting that assistance to our Latinx communities in multiple fields. People are still scared. People are still, like, even as I talked to people over the weekend, they were talking a lot about COVID being one of their priorities, along with healthcare as a priority for the election. What we've seen in anecdotal and with some data to back it up, I think people, especially in the Latinx community, realize that it's such an important issue to for them to have access to healthcare at a time when we don't know when or whether we're going to get COVID or not. I think that's something that emerged with the pandemic.
Yeah. Angela, if there's anything that we've learned in the past 20 years or so, I think it's that Latinx voters are not a monolithic group. And there are certainly places in the Southwest and in Florida where there's a pretty substantial Latinx population that votes Republican. Is that a trend we see much of here in Michigan?
Yeah, so not necessarily. And it is true that, you know, we know that the Latinx community is not a monolith, but we're not necessarily seeing that here in Michigan. Latinx voters tend to be more Republican. If anything, they tend to be much more Democrat than in other parts of the country. And part of this can be due to the fact that, you know, they come from certain national origins, but also their experiences, particularly within the state, you know, can factor into that as well.
Right. So I wanted to ask, you know, we've talked a little bit about just the get out the vote effort, but what have each of you seen from the major parties this year in terms of their outreach? Is this, you know, how is this compared with maybe other big presidential election years that you've had a chance to observe? Sergio?
I would say the Democratic Party has been reaching out to more Latinos than I've seen in the past. Joe Biden, I've seen more ads with him with commercials specific to the Latinx community. And when I go on YouTube or other like social media platforms, I see a lot of Trump. However, I see the ads, but they're not targeted to me or targeted to the Latinx community. What I have seen are multiple organizations that are just sending in funds to organize and many groups hiring to get out the vote, not necessarily with the Democratic Party, but I think people that are motivated by, you know, ensuring that we win this election.
I think we have seen that this time around, the presidential campaigns have done, and in particular, the Democratic Party has done a better job of reaching out to the Latinx community. And so we know that in 2016, Clinton only advertised in Spanish and for states. And this time around, the Biden campaign is really advertising not only in Spanish TV, but in Spanish radio. Also, again, as I mentioned, bilingual to the Latinx community in a variety of states. I think it's across 13 states, including Michigan, right? And I think this is something that did not happen in 2016. At the same time, I think it's really important to emphasize that based on recent data that we've collected and that we've seen, that particularly has oversampled Latinx voters, we know that there's still a big share of Latinx voters who are registered who report that they still have not been contacted by the party, right? And this is a sizable share. There's a variation in like what the share is, but it's still there. So I think it signals that while there has been improvement, there's still a lot more ground to cover in terms of mobilizing the community.
Angela, I've seen those numbers too, and it's kind of crazy. I mean, there were years when the Republican Party was sending George W. Bush's nephew on the road to give speeches talking about his Uncle Jorge and mm-hmm. what he was going to do for the party. I mean, I think despite the fact that Donald Trump has sometimes spoken really disparagingly, for example, about Mexicans and Mexican Americans, that the, you know, that residents living in the U.S. are drug dealers and criminals and rapists. Mm-hmm. You know, there is at least a stated interest in Latinx voters who would be willing to vote Republican. What do you make of just the lack of contact to voters who might be making a difference?
Part of this lack of contact, you know, sort of stems from the priorities that campaigns have in mind, right? So I think they have limited resources and they need to focus their efforts on these high propensity voters that they really want to get out the vote, and oftentimes do not necessarily try to invest in some of these blocks of voters or communities that are harder to mobilize and that actually need to be double mobilized, right? And that need to be, you know, register first and then contacted and reminded that they need to go out and vote, right? So I think, you know, strategically, probably campaigns are kind of taking a narrow view on this, right? And they're, you know, maybe thinking we're going to try to mobilize this particular community or this particular group of voters that doesn't need as much contact and as much mobilization as other groups. But, you know, in hindsight, right, like, I mean, if you really think about it, that's kind of a short-term strategy, because once you bring certain groups of voters, like new immigrant groups, into the fold, and once they're already registered, we know, right, that research tells us that they're, once they're registered, they're much more likely to participate and to engage, right? And so we can overcome some of those turnout deficits by getting people registered to begin with. That's just not necessarily the priority of a lot of political campaigns.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are Angela Ocampo, assistant professor in the political science department at the University of Michigan, and Sergio Sierra Reyes, who's a community organizer in and around Grand Rapids. Sergio, if I can turn back to you, as I noted at the when we started talking, there are an awful lot of younger voters out there. How many people do you think you've run into or seen on your social feeds who might be voting for the first time this year?
It's been a surprising number of people. My son, actually, he's going to be a first-time voter this year, and I've been like reminding him constantly. And so he's going to be voting this time for the first time. And then there's friends that I didn't know hadn't voted before, or friends that I didn't know that didn't know they could vote. It's been really interesting to and kind of inspiring to see how many new voters are active and so many questions. I've gotten, like, never before this election, gotten so many people contacting me when they were getting ready to vote, asking me who I was voting for. And so that was, it's encouraging to say the least.
What do you think they make of the last 4 years?
So from what I've been hearing is like the last 4 years activated them. They said, I've seen it firsthand. I no longer have the privilege to not vote. I think they've seen how the current administration has impacted their personal lives, lives of their loved ones. And I think they're ready. They've, you know, the seeing their friends put in all this effort is ready mobilizing them.
Yeah. The separation of children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border has been happening, and we still have many families who have not been reunited. I wanted to ask both of you, perhaps Sergio first, how much is immigration a defining issue for Latinx voters that you've talked to?
This has been a very sensitive issue for everyone. For me personally, on family members that are undocumented, and with my work with Movimiento Cosecha, we're seeking dignity, respect, and permanent protection for the 11 million undocumented immigrants living in Grand Rapids in the United States. In Michigan, we're fighting for licenses for all. And I think that this, not just the usual immigration that's happening, but how this administration is going after even permanent residents and citizens, and how they're seeing what's happening at the border. I think it's something that there was some level of detachment for, you know, second generation or third generation immigrant that was completely like removed. We see our relatives, our friends, just how this has been impacting us and how it's been progressively getting worse. And just the rhetoric that we hear and how it we see it energize other people against us. It's just, I think the fear has been rising.
Angela, do you see any variation among people's political views based on the variation in residency and citizenship? As, you know, Sergio mentioned, there are many families in which members of one immediate family may have very different statuses from person to person. And some families where the question has been settled for a generation or two. Do you think that there's a substantial difference in how people view the issue based on that?
Yeah, so we actually know and we find that across generation and across residency and also documentation status, right, the issue of immigration is incredibly important. And we don't find a lot of differences, right? And part of this is because this issue, regardless of how far removed from the immigration experience Latinx people might be, they still consider it an important issue, right? They can still, in many ways, identify with the issue because they know someone in their close family or friend circle who is an undocumented person. And so the idea of immigration is not far removed from them, even if they might be second or third generation. And this shapes, right, the way in which right now Latinos view so many of the different dimensions of the issue of immigration, including the child separation, including the incarceration of these children, right, at the border and the border facilities, that, as Sergio mentioned, the sterilization of women detainees, and so on and so forth. And so we actually don't find much of a difference across generation or residency status.
You know, I think there are a lot of voters in other demographics, certainly white voters, and probably we could say this about a lot of Black voters that we've spoken with in Michigan too. When you ask them how they're feeling about the year, I mean, the word is just shook. Maybe it's Black Lives Matter. Maybe it's the pandemic. Maybe it's the fact that they've been out of work since March or April. But there's just this feeling of turmoil and having endured a lot this year. And this simultaneous, we've heard many times from people about a simultaneous sense of relief that Election Day is almost here, and also a sense of dread. What is your read on how folks in your networks are feeling about this moment right now with everything that 2020 has brought behind them? Angela, would you go first?
Yeah, so sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think people are exhausted in so many ways. People are feeling a lot of anxiety for what's to come, right? And I think a lot of people have been trying to mentally prepare their families, right? Thinking about, you know, we may not know the outcome of the election on Tuesday. And so we have to really think about how to deal with those things. I think, you know, people are just kind of hoping that the year ends, but also worried that they're saying these things. Okay, like, let's wait for the year to end, because who knows, right? The year's not over. Who knows what November and December might bring, right? Given everything that we've sort of lived through all these months. So I think, you know, the pandemic is still going to dominate people's lives in so many ways, because cases are rising, because, you know, we're entering the winter season. And I think depending on the outcome of the election, this might bring people some peace of mind. And it might, depending on who wins, right? But it might also exacerbate a lot of the anxiety and the exhaustion that we're seeing people under right now.
Sergio, how about you? What's your read on this?
Yeah, I took a deep breath as Angela was finishing up. I think people feel a lot of anxiety, but I personally feel a sense of, like, a deep sense of pride in seeing all the work that, like, my friends and colleagues at the Urban Core Collective, like Latino Network, at the Hispanic Center, like all these organizations that the NAACP that have been working so hard, like never before. I've never seen this happen before. Just people in general on my feed, volunteering, asking how they can help. It's been challenging. And I think it's people are planning. People are planning on how they're going to do self-care on Tuesday and the days following that. And I think that a lot is riding on this election for so many of us in a very, very real way.
Sergio Sierra Reyes is a community organizer. He's coming to us from his home in the Grand Rapids area. And Angela Ocampo is a University of Michigan assistant professor in the Department of Political Science. Angela, Sergio, thanks so much for your time today. We hope you have a safe week.
Thank you, April.
Thank you.
And that's Stateside for today. Our show is produced by Mike Blank, April Van Buren, and by our director, Mercedes Mejia. The executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Stateside is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. Almost there, guys. Just one more day. We'll see you tomorrow.